Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
The information that I was given says that you buy high-grade biotoxins and sell them to anyone who'll meet your price.
If all of the Ministry's reports about me were true, I could easily shapeshift and slip out of these restraints or sprout wings and fly to my ship.
Why should she believe a fugitive and not her own government?
Because her government sent 109 agents to Agaron 30 years ago, and they want all 109 accounted for. Right or wrong, dead or alive.
If you're innocent, I'm sure you'll be given a chance to defend yourself.
Well, I'm guilty. I'm guilty of not returning when I was told to. I'm innocent of selling biotoxins, but I'm guilty of being a fugitive. But I don't deserve to go to prison, and I don't deserve to be shot.
We're here to take you to Vulcan. No one's going to shoot you.
What about her?
Hey, we should start this thing.
Okay.
I've already started.
All right. Oh. Okay, Dan. All right. We've started the podcast. Mm-hmm. That works for me.
Set a course.
Oh, hold on.
Let's see if we can find something to eat.
Can you wiggle the thing? I'm sorry.
Started?
We're about to, but just wiggle the thing. Okay.
Ooh, there it goes.
All right. So now we can start. So mimic what we just did, Dan.
Okay.
Dan, you got to be all like, I'm going to start.
Well, let's. Hey, are we start? Hey,
that's nothing like you just
hey.
Did.
Hey, let's start. Hey.
Hello. No.
Hey,
Dan. Previously, you sounded super cool. It sounded like you're all like, hey, why don't we get this thing started? But now you're like going off on some thing.
Hey, guys, let's kick it off.
Okay, the podcast?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. And then, Jesse, you said you had the line, I had already started. I've already started. I knew it was something along those lines. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm already doing it.
We've recreated the magic that happened before.
So you ready?
The clock stopped working.
Are we ready?
We've already been ready. Yes.
Set a course. Let's see if we can find something to eat.
I've already set a course. I had my food.
Hey, that's the second time we've heard that.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if it's the second time the audience has heard that.
Oh, no, we don't know yet. It depends on how Patrick edits it.
And probably not, though. Probably that'll be the first time. That's my guess.
Okay.
What are we doing here? We're doing the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast.
We do that every week. We've been doing it every week for a long time. It's episode 231.
Most weeks.
Wow.
Episode 231.
Wait, why are you... Oh, you're talking about our... I thought you were talking about 231 episode of Enterprise. I was like, what? That's not right.
No, that's crazy.
I don't know.
Isn't that 231 episodes of nothing in Star Trek?
No.
Nothing.
That means there is of something.
No.
Of something.
No. Oh, it's 231st episode of It's Got Star Trek.
Yes.
And on this episode, this week, we are going to be discussing... We'll do it calmly. And we'll relax.
Take it easy.
Take our time. We don't need to be getting all crazy.
You better chill out, Dan.
We're doing the seventh ent.
Okay, we're dancing.
Seventh ent.
Getting ahead of things.
Seventh ent.
Okay, it's Enterprise. Yes, it's Enterprise. We're discussing Star Trek.
The seventh ent.
There
are seven ents. This is the seventh.
Okay, the episode is called...
Maybe there's seven ents.
The episode is called The Seventh.
There were seven.
Seven what?
The seventh. We'll get to what that's all about.
There were seven ents, Archer. Captain.
Do you know which episode?
Seven what?
There were seven ents, Captain.
Do you know what episode of the season this was?
No.
I think it was the seventh.
It was the seventh episode of the season.
Yeah, I know. It was. Yeah. I noticed that.
Do you think do you think when they came up with that, they're like, oh, this is going to be great?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
I wasn't 100% sure if that sound clip was somebody saying yes.
I know, it wasn't.
Yes?
It's hard sometimes with the Enterprise because there's a lot of music and stuff going on in the background.
Yes?
That one's better.
That's a good one. What was the previous one?
Yes.
Was that Manos saying yes?
Actually, it was Moss. Or was it Manos? Moss O'Manos.
I don't understand what just happened.
Who is Moss?
Was it Moss O'Manos? Is it Moss O'Manos?
Is this a Spanish language?
Do you want Moss O'Manos? I think we want Manos. Do you want Moss O'Manos?
Oh, do you mean like more or less?
Are you
less?
Trying to say mayonnaise?
Mayonnaise. I would be saying more, that if I was trying to say that.
More or less?
Is yeah.
You're getting Moss.
So when you watch this episode, so this is me asking what you guys thought. If you watch this episode, do you want to watch Moss O'Manos of this episode?
I mean Moss, but my question was who is making the quote, the recording? You have a recording of somebody saying something.
What?
Seven what?
That?
No. No.
this?
Yes.
Yes, okay. What? I was asking, was that
Manos? Yes.
Was that Manos saying the previous one?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, wait. Yeah, okay. Okay, you're saying yes.
Yeah.
In a confusing way.
No.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Is there a problem?
All right. This will be a fun episode. So we
couldn't agree more.
We should get moving. It is the seventh episode of the second season. I'm sure the production people were delighted by that.
The seventh Ent.
the seventh episode of Enterprise.
Oh, I wanted to quickly mention about one thing last week that I can't believe I forgot to bring up was the fact that the episode of TNG Homeward that we did last week,
yes.
They did that in Insurrection to a degree. That
yes,
was like Insurrection.
I forgot about mentioning that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I know.
Because there was a whole angle on it.
Yeah, the Insurrection came out after this episode, obviously.
It did,
but like,
yeah.
It was like that's kind of where they got the most of the plot from. Maybe they thought they were just like, we could have done this episode better, so let's give ourselves a second chance with the movie. I don't know, but it's an interesting
thing.
And
how did that second chance work out? All right. For our full review of Insurrection, wait for the future. Sometime in the future, because we haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
We'll get to
it's
it
been a long,
eventually.
It's been a long fucking time since... I think I've only seen that movie once, because I was like, I've already seen what I need to see from this.
Yeah. That was like Nemesis. Anyway,
I think I've actually seen Nemesis 1.5 times.
It makes me shudder. Okay. TNG movies another
time.
We
don't know that.
But we do have one email, speaking of last week's episode, Homeward.
Oh, yeah.
We have one email from our old friend, Stephen Schwartzoff.
Set a course.
Who is in Olomouc, Czech Republic. And he says, "Dear gentlemen, first watching Homeward years ago, I kept thinking how similar it seemed, at least aesthetically, to the 1988 New Zealand film The Navigator, A Medieval Odyssey. It was about how a group of medieval miners from England, following the visions of one of them, had to travel through the center of the earth to what turns out to be modern-day New Zealand.
That's impossible.
In order to save their village from the Black Death.
That is not possible!
It could happen.
Their costume, setting, and tone of the villagers' adventures were quite similar. So, I looked this up, and...
This is not Flight of the Navigator, the Disney film about being in that alien spaceship.
No.
This is just the Navigator.
This is, yes. And the tagline on it is, a haunting original film. The work of a fresh and unusual talent, combining Herzog's dogged visionary zeal with Lucas's showmanship.
Wait, it doesn't actually have those guys. They're just claiming that it has that vision?
The Navigator.
Wait, isn't that...
An odyssey across time. This poster looks fucking... Badass, I gotta say.
Isn't that a little bit like presumptuous to go around saying like my movie has the vision of
Steven
Spielberg?
No. It's the critic.
It's like the New York
Times. Oh, the critic says that.
I thought they
were saying that their movie was.
That would be hilarious. If that was like the marketing tagline. No, I should have mentioned this is in quotes. That is a quote from David Arnson from Newsweek. No less than Newsweek. The poster is awesome. So yeah, look it up. The Navigator, An Odyssey Across Time, a Vincent Ward film. I'm very intrigued by that. So thank you, Stephen. But Stephen also goes on to say, I really think it would be cool to see a return of the Borallans in Discovery's 32nd century timeline, where in the 800 years after TNG, given the change in environment and infusion of Rozhenko DNA, the Borallans have made massive technological progress. Unrestrained due to the isolation caused by the burn, they've moved into space and become a formidable enemy. They are completely evil and take over all the other cultures in the quadrant. We thus find out that Picard and the Prime Directive were right, and we should have let them die. Just an idea.
Just an idea.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, from Olomouc. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very interesting idea.
That's an interesting idea. That's definitely something on like one of the side comic books or like some.
Well,
like that would definitely not make it into the mainstream.
But Star Trek.
See,
what it would be kind of. I do agree.
I mean, no, I agree.
Awesome
with, I would be. I would
readdress them somehow.
I agree. It would be awesome, yeah. And I'd be really into watching that. The only thing is like Star Trek never really like.
They don't re-explore aliens
like that.
You know what they did? You know what they did though? They did that. That's basically Star Trek 2. It's a follow up on a single episode of Star Trek TOS. Yeah. Now, granted, true. Homeward is maybe not as good as an episode as the TOS one.
There's so much weird like.
Dan's rubbing his hands together.
I can't try to think of the.
He's
the
squinting
right
his
word.
Eyes in thought.
Just the fact
he looks
that
quite anguished
just the
as
fact
he puts
like you said there
thought.
Was the Rzhenko blood and it's like they've got this character Worf's brother who's never appeared before that episode and suddenly they're going to write a series like based around like his blood being in the system.
Well, not
and,
a
like,
whole series.
No, I'm sorry. Hey. Episode, whatever.
Hey.
Look, I'm into it a big way. I really am.
Really?
I'm just saying that like
into it.
That's like comic book material where you really get to delve on some minutia in the lore. It's minutia that you dive into in the lore, and like there's a lot of episodes where you could do crazy shit like that.
I will say though,
I think it's a good idea.
The one alteration I would make is that Steven ends the email by saying like by whatever results, whatever they've turned into, it would demonstrate that Picard was correct. That's what I kind of disagree with. I think
are you talking about when Picard was correct when he like decided not to genocide those Borg that one time?
Oh, okay. Really?
You were being purposefully obtuse to mention an episode that we haven't covered. And we gotta wait. We gotta wait.
And you
until,
know what? Let's never do that.
We gotta wait to cover that episode.
It's all right.
when it comes up, then we can cover it.
Come on, Captain.
No, but Steven suggests that if they turn evil, if they cause a problem, if they take over the quadrant and just have profound negative impact, or at least negative impact from a certain perspective, then that would ipso facto be proof that Picard and Picard's interpretation of the Prime Directive in Homeward were correct, and that it would have been better just to let the people die in the natural disaster that they were experiencing. I'm just saying...
Healthy living!
I don't agree with that premise, but I do think that would make an interesting premise for an episode to interrogate. The idea is like, does this mean the Prime Directive, you know, the Picard was right or wrong, et cetera. So that would be my variation on the theme played by our friend Steven. Mm. Mm. Oh, I thought you were going to play a sound effect.
I couldn't agree more.
I like that you had that, but you were reluctant to play it because you're like, nah, but you know.
Maybe now's not the perfect time.
I don't want to agree that much.
Don't take me literally here. That's the problem with playing these sounds is you have to like give it some freedom. Yeah. You can't take everything super literally. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get moving. So thanks again, Steven. We'll get moving.
Thanks for being so enlightening.
To this week's discussion. But first, of course, just the obligatory mention of our Patreon page at patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
It's what I had been trained to do.
We've got some. We're building out the content there. We're adding more stuff every week, and even in between the weeks. And there's free stuff and free previews and all that stuff.
So, yes.
So go check it out. You can even sign up for free and just to keep abreast of what's being posted up there and check out the previews as they come.
I'm afraid it's confidential.
No, it is not confidential. In fact, we encourage people to investigate this, Dan.
Headache, nausea, diarrhea.
Right. I can't think of anywhere where that would fit into the episode,
no.
But like I had to like record that.
Yeah.
Headache, nausea, diarrhea.
Diarrhea.
How come he's just bringing that up at dinner?
Because fucking vlogs is hilarious. Okay.
Very Vulcan.
Last thing before we dive deeply into our discussion is...
that's why I was hesitant before to play the sound, because I was afraid I was going to play something that was like a non sequitur, but I shouldn't be worried about that too much, because, you know, even if it's a non sequitur, you can still get some enjoyment from the sound.
Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Sorry, it just derailed the whole thing.
No, it's
okay.
It's fine. You can. I mean, you're the man when it comes to these things.
You're the dude.
You just do your thing.
The last thing I wanted to say was, if you would like to write us an email, or send us a voicemail or whatever, You can send us pictures, whatever you want to send us.
Send us more pictures, please.
Feedback. You write to feedback.
Something at, funny up here, sir.
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. That's feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Feedback, not feedback.
Feedback.
Oh, shit.
And if you'd like to record up to a 90-second voicemail message, you can go to itsgotstartrek.com/record. And
I'll be sure to tell him.
Play it on the show and react to it and all manner of funny.
Toast.
Funny stuff. Audience interaction. It's all
toast,
the, it's
toast, all the, toast,
it's
toast, toast.
It's all the rage these days. You know, this whole like a little back and forth, a little of this, a little of that. The audience, they love. They just they love that shit.
Toast.
Okay.
Toast.
That signals the beginning of our chill, relaxed discussion.
So what? Better cool it, man.
Of the seventh, which I'm
the seventh ent. Seventh ent.
The seventh.
There were seven ents, and that's the seventh.
You know one problem with this title? That they did
is something
not,
wrong?
There's, yeah, there was a problem with this title that I bet you they did not foresee when they made this episode in 2002. Actually, when they wrote it.
You were telling me lies.
It was even earlier.
You're a liar.
No, I'm not lying. I think it was November 6th, 2002 is when it aired. It was produced probably not too much longer before that. I think one thing they hadn't considered when they picked this episode title, as clever as it is, as evocative as it is, especially at the beginning of the episode when T'Pol is all talking about like, oh, there were six other people. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, the episode was called The Seventh.
Six other people.
What they had not predicted was
I killed him.
Was the minor inconvenience that a person viewing this episode, this television program in 2024, the minor inconvenience some of us might encounter when, in an attempt to view the program, we go to the search bar and we click on the microphone icon and we speak into our device and say,
I don't do that.
The seventh. And the search results come up only things that are the number seven TH.
Ah.
The so number seven TH, right. As opposed to seventh spelled out. Right, and then you know what happens if you say, oh, and then you click the icon again and you say the seventh spelled out. Mm-hmm. The results are just even more stupid. They're just even less useful.
So because
they spelled it out, but the audio recognition always wants to make it to the numeral seven.
Yeah, well, that's like I have some Hugh Lights and two of my scene names. One has the
Hugh. You mean like that episode of Star Trek TNG, Iborg episode with Hugh?
No, you know what I'm talking Hugh about. Lights? You know we're not talking about that.
You mean the LED Hugh Lights?
Yes,
they're all like green and blinky.
Yeah, like a Borg, green and blinky.
Like a Borg.
Right, yeah.
They got like the red laser.
Yeah, that one. Are you trying to give me some of my own medicine
did you,
here?
Did you like that was pretty cool, wasn't it? Iborg.
Yeah, that was all right. That was quite an episode.
okay, go for it, Dan.
My Hugh lights. I have two scenes. One has the word plus in it, and one has the word minus. And depending on which scene I say, for one of the scenes, it wants to spell out the word plus, and for the other scene, it wants to use the minus sign
And to clarify, these scenes that you're talking about, Dan, are in the Hue LED smart light ecosystem.
Different
colors.
So you say like super cool room plus, and it turns
one
on.
One of the lights is red, one of them's blue, the other one's black.
So I have a super cool room plus and a super cool room minus, and for one of them, it wants to keep spelling plus, and the other one, it keeps wanting to use the minus symbol. And it's gotten to the point where I've somehow tricked it into thinking it's spelled out. So what it does is it first displays it with the minus symbol, and then it replaces it with like the spelled out one. I don't know. You have to trick your Google to like voice recognition like somehow, because if you get it wrong the first time around, you can't untrain it or some shit.
Here's the funny thing. So
what I ended up doing is I ended up creating four scenes. Two of them, one of them was spelled plus spelled out, and one was with the plus sign. The other one was with minus spelled out, and the other one was with the minus sign. Because there have been times where there's been times it's chosen one over the other. So this way, it doesn't matter which one it says. So I've had to use that's called a workaround, because you shouldn't have to do that.
Hey Jesse, did you hear that? This guy
he figured out a workaround.
I thought you were about to start singing a song like a parody on that
workaround.
You know that song, the mess
yeah,
around.
Yeah, right. No, that's I was singing
instead of the mess around, you do the workaround.
That's what I was doing. I was like, you gotta do the workaround
with your Hue lights.
You gotta do the workaround.
Yes. Well, good. I'm glad we got that out there in the open.
We don't know that.
You're a natural storyteller.
Oh man, you just made fun of me.
Do you have Captain Archer offering to Paul toast?
Toast?
That's all I have.
It's one of my favorite parts of the whole episode.
Did you miss the part where I did this?
Toast, 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 toast. Toast.
Oh, whoops. I played the song, the sound of it bouncing the ball twice in a row. Right. I didn't mean to do that. Yeah, don't you remember when I did
toast,
this?
Toast, 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 toast.
Okay. You weren't listening. How did you hear that but not hear it?
Like, all of these questions are valid, and even pointing them out is valid. But you know the answer. The answer is you're asking a rhetorical question because clearly I didn't remember that. My brain is Swiss cheese.
Okay.
My brain is Swiss cheese. All I have is Star Trek.
That's well,
all
I remember that's in the hearing brain. It, but I didn't know what he was saying. Yeah. I just know it as a sound.
I think it's
my favorite part of the whole episode.
I think you registered it as a sound that was playing. Like you heard it like going like you heard it bleeping around, and you heard the fact that was like silly, but you didn't actually absorb what was being said.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
You need to turn.
You said it, Dan.
You need to open your receptors. Is what you need to do. Your receptors are closed.
I'm doing it right now.
You got to
maybe the next break.
You got to
help me open my receptors.
You got output, but you need a little bit. Turn up the input a little more. Turn up the input a little more.
Turn up the gain.
I don't know about that.
How about the AOL?
Yeah, no.
There's like Gain, and then there's AOL. These are brands of laundry detergent.
AOL Instant Messenger.
Mama gets it out with AOL.
Mama gets it out with. Okay. Him. Yeah, she goes. He goes. A-L-L. He goes. Good morning, and she's like, Captain, and he goes, Toast, and she says, No, thank you.
Yeah, it's my favorite part of the whole episode.
Yeah, it was pretty...
my favorite part of the whole episode is
I
just
think
him.
She eats toast.
It's just him saying toast. So you know that
toast, toast, toast,
yeah, just
toast.
Him, that I love. And then to Paul, just saying like no, it was so good.
I don't know. Was it? She says like no. Oh wait, it's wait a second. Wait a second. It's this one.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
He goes. He goes. He goes. He. Hold on. I got to make sure I got them all lined up here.
All right. Here we go.
It's the episode start.
That's the theme song.
Enterprise. Toast.
No, thank you.
Very well. Yes, I love that they're sort of recorded at like sort of different amplitudes.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Toast.
No, thank you.
Yeah, that one's a lot more like you hear a lot more shit background.
I know we were not as calm as we promised and not as relaxed as we promised at the time.
We don't know that.
But it's a good start. We're at the toast part.
It's all right.
It's right at the beginning of the episode where he's all says toast.
He was very emphatic about that.
Well, don't worry, Trip. We'll get to you.
Yeah.
We'll get to you, Trip.
Where would I stay?
Okay, so we talked about toast. And the next thing in my notes.
We talked about toast. Next thing you know, that's going to be one of the AI titles in the transcript. It's going to be like all about toast or something
it's
like that.
It's called Toast Talking.
Toast Talking.
Toast Talking with Patrick.
Why don't you do a podcast about toast?
You know, we could. I'm really good at fucking toast. That might have to just be a solo.
What do you mean you're good at toast?
I really
doesn't even make any sense.
No,
really good
does.
At toast, guys.
I'm good at toast too, man.
I'm really fucking good at toast. Jesse is good at toast.
I love playing toast.
I know. Here's how I know I'm good at toast. We had some kids over, and
I don't even know what that means.
We had some kids over, spend the night, and then one of them, Jamie was offering them food, and then one of the kids was like, "Can Patrick do the toast?" I'm good at toast. I'm just saying I'm good at toast.
A kid asks you to toast the room to be like, here, here.
Yeah,
wave, ding, 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 ding.
No, not that kind of toast.
No,
I'm not
kids
that
aren't
guy.
Allowed to drink.
That kind of
yeah,
toast.
I know. It's like, why is there a party full of children asking you to make a toast for them?
You're doing your pun business.
Oh, so they wanted you to,
make the toast. Make but the if, toast.
They
but
wanted crisp
they
bread.
Didn't actually want you to make toast either. So you were making that up too.
No, it's true. No. I'm really good at making toast.
If this is your idea of humor.
All right, we'll do a podcast. We'll make some toast. And then you can try it out. Jesse,
jam.
We can all make some various types of toast.
It's just
different
toast. There's not different types of toast. There's just toast.
Yeah, but there's, let's say a buttered and salted toast. There's different types of butter, different types of toast, different toasting lengths.
Oh, now you're talking about toppings.
No. Just
You do different toppings.
To me, a toast, you got to at least have butter on it, but you can then have some other stuff. No, if you just want toast, that's fine, too. I'll make that better than most people, too. The base toast is the toast is the foundation.
Toast.
And I'm good at that. Don't take that away
from
me.
It's what I had been trained to do.
This is what I've trained myself to do. And I didn't use any of that. I didn't watch any fucking YouTube videos. It's just a lifetime of appreciating a well, properly toasted bit of bread.
I'm not certain what this means.
Well, anyway, like I said, we talked about toast. Now,
I don't understand.
On my notes, moving to the next topic.
Okay, next
is
topic.
Water polo.
Water polo. I had some water polo questions, too.
I bet you, I figured both of you gentlemen would have thoughts with regard to the water polo. Now, we've done plenty of Enterprise episodes, and we know that Archer is into water
polo.
So,
I want to,
is not news.
Okay, I want to first ask the...
This is just very water polo-centric,
this bit here. I want to ask the first question that we already know is unanswerable, because this has been asked so many times before.
I love these types of questions.
This is the most obvious question, is... Whose idea was it for him to love water polo? Yeah. Was a writer really into water polo? Or did they think that? Oh wait, I have a question. Here's what I have.
Idea.
No, wait.
It's the sport of the future.
let me present you my ideas. Okay. Either a writer was Either some.
This is great. Hey, Jesse. Oh, Dan's asked a question, and he's now going to present. He's going to present his answers.
Okay.
To the question.
So either some writer or some showrunner or something was all like, "I love water polo." Okay, that's A. Two is somebody like knew someone who played water polo. Three, they thought it would be funny.
That's what I'm thinking.
And D, which is kind of what Jesse said. It's like, well, they were actually sitting there thinking, he's like, well, in the future we'll have flying cars and you know, and people will be wearing brightly colored clothing with like their pockets inside out. And oh yeah, they'll.
You just talking about Back to the Future too. And are all your references to the future just Back to the Future?
And two. Oh yeah, for some reason everyone's really loves water polo because it's ahead of its time. And like, yeah, I think it'll finally make its comeuppance. You know.
The comeuppance. Water polo is going to get that implies it's going to get its revenge on the other
sports.
Yeah,
because nobody talks about water polo. It's the it's the sport that's left behind.
Look.
People talk about curling more than they talk about water polo.
Yeah. That's because fucking curling
Curling's
rules.
Curling's bizarre.
You seen curling? That shit's intense.
Water
polo is pretty weird, though, if you think about it.
Water polo is super weird. I vote for they thought it was funny.
I think curling is intense, like I think shuffleboard is intense.
But
shuffleboard is pretty intense.
I don't know what sport. Like, how about bocce ball?
Hey.
I like playing bocce ball.
Yeah, bocce ball you just play when you're drunk.
Two days off, essentially. The ship is kind of taking a 2-day break, and so he's just going to watch water polo the whole time.
So
eat his toast.
I want to establish the answers here.
Okay. For the audience at home, Dan is doing devil horns at both Jesse
just
and I.
To know you, I'm talking
specifically.
To you
he's doing that motion.
That's how
in,
he points, if, points
if,
at both.
If
of
you
us.
Recall, in the first Crocodile Dundee movie. When Crocodile Dundee hypnotizes a water buffalo that is blocking the road, he does that like that devil horns thing. That's what Dan was just doing to Jesse and I. So if Jesse and I suddenly pass out,
he's putting the whammy on us, man.
It's Dan. Dan did it.
So Jesse, you think they did it because it was like water polo? It's the way of the future, basically. And then Patrick, you think it's just a joke they're playing? Yeah.
I mean, I would say it's a joke too. I mean, it's just it's funny.
It's just like why water polo? But also, did you?
I was about to answer, and you freaked me out.
Did you also catch that? Did you also catch that he was watching it on some shitty little monitor, and half the screen was taken up by a heads-up display, like the HUD?
Yeah.
And like, so, like, not
they
only
have
was
bad
it on,
monitors on the Enterprise.
Not only was the monitor small, but you couldn't see the game because it was all these big numbers all over the side.
Well, Enterprise started. They dressed this set before flat screen TVs were
I know, but it's still hard to believe they didn't at least have something as big as a television to watch, like a standard in the year 2000 we had fucking I know you were gonna do that. We in the year 2000 we had large TVs, and there's something they could have done something more convincing than a tiny little computer monitor. I
don't disagree, but they, of course, the whole aesthetic
there,
is the whole submarine
aesthetic.
And
why was there so much heads-up display? Because it looked all... was that supposed to be like, this looks like Star Trek because it's got all these on-screen displays and it's futuristic? Is that what they're going for?
I think so, yeah.
I don't understand.
My evidence for them picking water polo because... because they thought it was silly. And by the way, I preface this by noting... I in no way mean to denigrate the sport of water polo.
No, you gotta be crazy athletic to play fucking water polo.
Because you gotta stand in the water.
Where's your
you gotta like throw that fucking ball.
You ain't standing, bro.
You gotta swim around.
Those pools are like
it's deep water.
Those are like 30 feet deep or some shit.
You gotta tread water for a little bit and splash around. You gotta toss a ball.
You have to be able to tread water like anyone can stand.
Yeah, like the guy with the Ferrari and the mustache.
You have to be able to tread water as easily as you or I could just stand on our feet. And can you tread water as easily as you stand on your feet? I'm willing to bet none of us can.
I mean,
I can walk on the water.
Okay, Jesse's a Jesus figure.
Set a course.
He's always been the Jesus figure of the podcast, as we know.
Healthy living.
Water polo, I think, is super cool. It absolutely not meant to denigrate it. However, we do see multiple times in this episode and other episodes, but I think it's more acute here.
It's more cute. It's so cute.
Where when it's not Archer.
When
other people are talking about water polo in this episode, they're like, they're all like, what the fuck is up with this shit?
Hologram?
They're like, this guy really watches this shit all day? They're like, is the captain crazy?
Yeah, well, it was funny when
they think it's silly.
When Trip Tucker III was like taking advantage of like the captain's perks, he was all getting into
captain's perks.
He was all getting into watching water polo. Do you think he was? Now, I'm wondering,
I think he was doing it as a good.
Let me get in.
All right. Nice and relaxed.
Stop
talking.
Do you think Tucker was into watching water polo because he had suddenly found a newfound appreciation for it now that he's like going through Archer's like shit? Or do you think he's just pretending to be Archer?
He's just killing time, I think.
You think he's trying to like embody Archer and be like, this is what it feels like to be the captain, you know? Do you think he's like, do you think he's trying to like live as Archer would do? He's living vicariously through Archer? Or do you think he actually grew
He was bored.
Or do you think he grew an appreciation? Whatever. Because there's something to watch. There's things to watch other than water polo. No,
neither of those things. It was just that's all that Archer's program, the display, that's all it showed.
That's bullshit. You can totally put in some kind of
reprogrammed
Star Trek tape. Those wooden block tapes.
It will only play replays of water polo
matches. Tucker wanted to watch like
NASCAR. You're a liar.
It's specifically college water polo.
You're telling me lies.
Archer's really into college water polo. College level water polo. Okay. Break time. It's time to take a break, and when we return, we will continue this very relaxed, very calm discussion of...
Take it easy now. Take it easy.
The 7th. We'll be right back.
See you in the morning.
Are we back from break yet?
Okay, let's do it.
I'm back.
We're back from break.
Okay, let's do it.
There we go.
Yay, Star Trek.
We're dangerous.
Oh, yes.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Oh, no. No, we're not. No.
Not
joking at all, Lee.
So what's the deal with this Archer?
What's the deal?
Gary Mitchell.
With Archer. Wait. Okay, what were you going to say? I didn't mean to.
I said stop talking.
What's the deal?
What's the deal with this Archer guy being all like bratty towards T'Pol because she wouldn't like fill him in on her secret mission? And then
you don't identify with Archer feeling out of the loop?
But
his ship being manipulated from afar by the Vulcan science directorate or Vulcan high command, whatever the fuck.
I would be okay with that, except for the fact that he turns around and does the same thing to Trip, which Trip mentions, by the way. Trip is like, Captain, you did.
Yeah.
He goes.
Come on, Captain.
And he like. he goes.
Come on, Captain. Come on, Captain.
Okay. All right.
So look, he turns around and does the same thing to fucking Archer.
He's a hypocrite. That's nothing new.
Because now that now
he's very human.
Now that he's in on the secret, he's like, oh no, it's super secret. God, I can't tell you. Oh, it's too important for you to know.
No. I think that's an unfair characterization of one Mr. Captain Jonathan Archer, because while he does do the same thing he does the same thing as T'Pol, but he does it for a different reason, and he acts differently about it. T'Pol has been ordered not to tell him.
But she tells him anyway.
Yeah, she does eventually tell. She breaks her orders. That's part of the character development. But let me get
and right, and that's why they're not allowed to know that he's gone, because those were secret orders.
And when Archer wants to know purely because he's curious and he's annoyed that he's going to have to do something where he's out of the loop. This is no different than like the Pegasus when Riker and his captain were like hauling the Enterprise around, and Picard was all like, why the fuck can't you tell me what's going on? It's frustrating when that's the situation, right? So Archer's already frustrated. He knows it's an order from Starfleet. T'Pol looks frustrated about it too. It's not like T'Pol is like shoving it in his face. Archer is being a little bit bratty. Once he finds out, he's like, oh shit, I get it. It's a classic, oh shit, I get it. And then now he has to do the same thing to Trip, except when he does it to Trip, he's more sheepish about it. He's not like gloating. He's not like you were.
I don't know.
I don't know what accent you were doing, but whatever you were doing.
You all I do. I don't
I'm
know.
Archer,
I don't
know. Trip, you're so boo. Stupid. I win. No, no.
Boo.
I think that Archer was sheepish and felt bad that he couldn't let his friend Trip in on the knowledge. I think he was annoyed. He would have preferred to let Trip in. It's not like he was gloating that he had secret knowledge that Trip doesn't.
I think the only reason Trip pointed out the fact that Archer was doing that was to let the audience know that it wasn't bad writing. Because if they didn't bring it up, I would see it as an inconsistency that Archer would be hypocritical like that. So what the writers did is they pointed it out. By pointing it out, they thus...
You mean the writers Rick Berman and Brennan Braggar? Who I think did a very good job in this episode.
They don't... I'm not talking about that.
I'm agreeing with you. You said a good
You totally tried to fucking change the subject.
No, it's not a subject. You said the writers, and it's color commentary, Dan. I'm adding information along the way.
But you were trying to veer off the topic.
No, not at all. You're in charge of this sentence.
No, because you mentioned the writers, and that was
you
fine.
Mentioned the writers.
You named the writers, and like, and then you said like, who did a very good job with the show. That was an attempt at a segue, is what you were trying to do.
No, not at all. Not at all. I wanted you to continue. This is VH1 Behind the Music. I'm the little guy popping up with the little fact bubbles. You're watching the video. You're the video, Dan.
Pop up
you're watching
Patrick.
The video. I'm the little bubble that pops up and is like, you know, Tina Turner did this, that, and the other thing in 1984.
They're a problem.
No, no problem whatsoever.
So,
except we don't know where we will stay.
Where would I stay?
I
had no doubt about that. That's true for the most part.
Okay, please continue your point.
I guess I could purge the impulse reactors.
That's a masturbation joke.
Oh, shit.
If you ask me.
Right.
And he was talking like polishing the rails or something.
I could polish all the handles and rails in engineering.
That's obviously a masturbation joke. That might even be a handjob joke, not
I
just
guess
masturbation.
I could purge the impulse reactors.
What I was saying was that it was hypocritical of Archer to be all onto Paul's side before, or no, be again, to be all pissy towards Paul, and then when he's on her side,
yeah,
then
he's
being
a hypocrite.
Then he's being a hypocrite to Trip Tucker III. And what I'm saying is, the writers had T3 bring it up and be like, Captain, you did the same thing with T'Pol. The reason they brought that up is because if they didn't bring that up, it could look like bad writing because we could see, oh, they don't realize that they just made a hypocritical scenario right there. And then here, there's another part in the episode that kind of does that too. Later in the episode, Archer goes, she's talking about like, you know, shooting an innocent person or whatever. Archer's like, what if he was innocent? Then it wouldn't have mattered whether he intended to use that weapon or not. That's what T'Pol says. Isn't that what she says?
Here's your point, motherfucker.
Wait a second.
What are you trying to say?
This is T'Pol.
Hey, Jesse, we should start a side podcast. Like, what's this guy trying to say?
T'Pol, T'Pol goes...
He's waving his finger.
This is a separate scenario that also was the writers pointed something out that if they hadn't pointed it out, I would think that it was just unintentional. Mm. And T'Pol goes, when the first call came in about this new mission, maybe that's why I wanted you with me. What if Jocelyn wasn't a smuggler? What if he was innocent? Then it wouldn't have mattered whether he intended to use that weapon or not. You know, so she's saying, like, if he was innocent, because Archer was like, T'Pol, it's okay that you shot him because he was going for you first. And she was like, well, it wouldn't have mattered if he was innocent. And then Archer says, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense. That line makes no sense. Why could she possibly say, and this whole thing of like T'Pol like getting emotional, I wasn't really buying a lot of that. It was weird. But like the fact that like she's saying shit like, well, if he was innocent, it wouldn't have mattered if he shot first or not. It's like, of course it matters. Like if someone's shooting at you, the only thing you can do is shoot back at them or get out of the way, I guess. So he was saying like, what you said just doesn't make sense. And if he had not said that, that would have been like left the viewer being like, what the fuck does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. So the writers pointed it out. And thus, by pointing it out, they are saying, like, no, we know what we're saying. It's an unaddressed. It doesn't
we
make
know
sense.
What we're saying.
And then you could say it was just like, maybe they, what I think is they read back the lot. They read back the script like three or four times. Mm-hmm. And on the final run through, they were like,
oh shit.
They were like, this doesn't make any sense.
Oh, fuck.
This part. Brandon Braga.
Rick Berman's all like, hey, Brandon.
Brandon.
This part. Check this out.
It just doesn't make any sense.
What are we going to do?
We're going to have the character.
Okay. Sound it out.
Sound it out. We'll have the character recognize. Is that the word? We'll have the character address. We'll have the character address this line that doesn't make sense. That way, we'll make people think we meant to write it like that. Yeah. They were covering up their mistakes.
I don't know about that. I think it's largely a fairly
tin hat.
I think it's a fairly well written episode. However, there is this, you know, we haven't even gotten to Manos and the whole thing yet. But this episode loses a little.
I killed him.
It loses a little bit of coherence when it becomes unclear at the end exactly what the message of the episode is, because it kind of seems like the episode, if we're taking Archer as the character who has the correct moral interpretation of the events, Archer's lesson is, you should always follow orders.
Yeah, you're given orders. It doesn't matter.
And you shouldn't feel guilty about anything, even if your government is fucking up and using you as a tool to commit atrocities. Don't worry about it. And part of the reason why it's undermined is because of this whole, is Manos a criminal or not? That they did do a good job of keeping you on your toes.
Flatten my forehead.
Through the episode. But the problem is by having him be a criminal in the end, it's kind of like, it kind of justifies Archer's position somewhat. And it's an Oogie position to have in a Star Trek.
I mean,
episode.
Honestly, like I didn't.
It's very early 2000s.
It is very early 2000s United States culture.
I thought he was pretty convincing as like when he was claiming he was innocent. I thought it was pretty convincing. Like it didn't feel forced to me. I was like, oh, this guy sounds like he really believes he's innocent.
Bruce Davison,
which is why like it is kind of weird that. I don't know. I kind of wished he was innocent and they'd written something more around that, because like that's more interesting than just like, oh, it's all good. He was bad all along. Don't worry about anything.
Because
all
they have this other plot line where it's all about the Vulcan high command doing like enforced memory extractions.
Right.
Which seemed to be something.
Have
that's
you
not,
heard of the Falara?
The fallopian tube.
Yes, the fallopian tube.
Fallopia.
It's an obsolete ritual.
So the episode seems to be critiquing it. The way it's filmed, the way DePaul sort of reacts to that information is that this is a critique of that idea of really a real violation by a government. And you think it's supposed to go hand in hand with the government being viewed as overreaching in this other plot line where they're chasing down these people who have decided to integrate with the communities that they live in. Now, again, but the end of the episode is like, oh, no, he was a criminal, a terrible criminal doing all these terrible things. So don't have sympathy for him. But right. Like the whole episode, we're like, do we have sympathy? Do we not? And T'Pol's whole angst is centered around her guilt at potentially having killed an innocent person.
See,
it's confusing.
I don't know about, okay. Now, I guess you could say, like, why I wasn't convinced about the whole, like, T'Pol freaking out as much as she did. Like, I wasn't quite sure why she was freaking out so much. Now, I guess you could say it's because all of her memories came flooding back and it was overwhelming. But she even admitted that at the time she was unsettled or whatever.
I was unsettled.
So she admitted at the time.
You've proven that with an audio clip.
We did. And so. Back at the back near the beginning of the episode, she was talking about back when it happened, when she had the Falara performed, which, by the way, is obsolete. I don't know why they say it's obsolete. It still works. It's just kind of shitty, like now.
My understanding of that,
it's just their philosophy doesn't agree with it anymore.
I think that's what she was saying. It was
it's not old fashioned. Yeah, it's not like they don't know how to do it anymore, or that it just doesn't. It's not like the Vulcans' minds have grown that they're ineffective against it.
Well, they had to resort to that because they probably didn't want to do that because it was all weird and
maybe
ancient.
Better methods now.
I don't know.
They had to do it because like she wasn't like getting over the. the trauma.
Maybe they had better methods.
That crusty old Vulcan looked like he wanted to do it. I don't know.
Yeah, he was looking really old.
I don't like the crusty old Vulcan.
Do you think they put
Enterprise
on,
has a few crusty old Vulcans.
Do you think
Vulcans?
They put old makeup on that dude? Or was that guy really... That guy looked old.
No, it was just an upsetting old man.
Oh, man.
Just a very upsetting old man. They have them in Hollywood.
I was unsettled.
They keep them on retainer in Hollywood for just this purpose.
So,
upsetting the people watching television programs.
So what the fuck is this? She wasn't
skin's flaking off the fucking screen.
You could say she was freaking out because like all her memories are coming back and it's overwhelming. But she already admitted that back then when it happened, she was emotional back then. So why was she so emotional? Now you could say, I guess. Do you think in the time between Enterprise and TOS, Vulcans have gotten better at stuffing their memories down their throats? Do you think they're like how long do you think it takes Vulcan?
No.
Like because 5,000. Remember in the episode All Our Yesterdays, they were talking about 5,000 years ago. Yeah. They were talking about how Vulcans were different. Yes. And McCoy specifically said to Spock, he goes, he said something to the effect of like, you won't see your kind of Vulcan for another 5,000 years or something, right?
Yeah.
And so 5,000.
Which is an exaggeration.
It's
when Sura comes out and he's all like, yo, hey, everybody, don't be freaking out.
What year was that?
I don't know. I don't remember that shit, but it's in Enterprise. Enterprise is where some of that stuff is. Okay.
Wait, okay, so I was going to say, because the TOS took place in the 2260s,
yes.
This place takes place about
2152, yeah, this episode.
Yeah,
right?
So it takes place 110 years ago, right? So I'm wondering, is that enough?
Across 110th Street.
Is that enough time? Is that enough time for the Vulcans to improve their ability at like hiding their emotions, do you think? And that's my question, is why was T'Pol so emotional? Is it because something about her is like more emotional, or is it because like for some reason, like, or was it because Vulcans weren't as good at handling their emotions? Because it didn't make sense to me that she freaked out as much as she did.
I get that. For me, it wasn't an issue because for a couple reasons. But first of all, the standard point always that Vulcans, the claims about their own culture are often exaggerated, and because we see so many examples that counter the purported stability of their repression of emotions and all that other stuff. This happens a lot, basically.
Yeah, like
that type of thing happens.
Like, one time Archer was like, "You never found him," and she goes, "Only once on Ryza. They thought they were invulnerable," and he was all like, "They?" She's like, I mean, he.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Vulcans don't lie. So right, they're not. They don't lie.
Well,
so,
because her memory's been fucked up with, and of course they lie too. In that case,
Do you think she just remembered it wrong, or do you think she was trying to hide it?
I
thought she was trying to hide it.
Maybe, but I didn't see it that
and
way.
And so what I was saying is she was lying.
Look, I think that again, some of it is because of this episode's a little cumbersome. As interesting and entertaining as it is, this is a highly rated episode. I think it's a very interesting and enjoyable episode that has some, especially because it has some very good character development that goes on it. But it is a little bit cumbersome, and this story that they're telling, it seems that they want to say that this is somebody who suffered trauma, point number one, and then suffered a second trauma when her government erased those memories, and presumably there you can't have no side effect from that, and that's partly what we're seeing here, is that those memories were not truly, I mean, obviously not repressed. That was not a permanent solution, because it's coming up now, because she's been reminded of it in another
stressful
situation.
Well, maybe they thought it would work better than it did.
Well, regardless, that's irrelevant, because the story is saying, it seems to be saying, this is a person who suffered multiple traumas related to this incident, and that's what explains her behavior in the current timeline when the plot is happening, right? Because of those traumas. And I can buy that those traumas would impact her ability to control her emotions and all that other stuff, particularly in this period of Vulcan lore, where we learn later in Enterprise, I won't give any spoilers, but later in Enterprise, there's a lot more Vulcan stuff that happens that gets them a little bit more on the TOS style Vulcan track. So about 100 years to go, and then they're already like close to that, but now there's some tweaks to the Vulcan philosophy that by the time of the TOS era, we have our more familiar Vulcans that we're dealing with.
Here's something about Surak. It
mind said, melds and all.
From Memory Alpha, it said, just prior to his death, Surak's Katra was taken and housed in a Katric Ark.
Yes. This is all season four Enterprise.
Wait. This arc was discovered in 2137 by Sira. Now, 2137, that doesn't say when he dies. That's when his arc was discovered, was in 2137. So he was lived before, way before Enterprise.
Yes, Surak lived way before Enterprise.
So Vulcan should have already had their emotionless shit down.
No, they do. This is the exact point I'm getting at. The pre-Surak Vulcans were like Romulans, like murdering each other left and right. You know, like a lot of other cultures. Surak gets them all logic, repress all their stuff.
He gets them logic.
Stuff it all down. And they still do horrible, evil things.
Well,
but,
it's a very reliable device, but it's not perfect.
Now they have a good framework for pretending like it's not. But regardless, they have now started down the path of much more control. In Enterprise, what we're supposed to understand is that Vulcans have sort of started to stray from that a little bit, and then they kind of get back on the wagon, so to speak, by the end of Enterprise.
T'Pol's mom, what was it, T'Pring?
No, that's I think it's T'Pow something.
T'Pow. Oh no, I shouldn't make fun of her name.
No, you shouldn't.
Who is T'Pol's mom? I should have said mommy. Little is revealed about T'Pol's family in the fourth season home, in which her mother, T'Less.
Oh, T'Less. That's right. We had all those, you know, more. Yeah. There's more. T'More and T'Less.
T'Ludidoo and T'Lalala.
No. We didn't make those jokes. It was a more or less joke.
Titty bitty toot toot.
I mean, I am amused and entertained by that. It has nothing to do with Star Trek. It has nothing to do with T'Pol's mother. But I enjoyed it.
When the episode where Trip Tucker III says,
"Where would I stay?"
Yes, that's home.
That's T'Less. T'Less did mention she was like
we discussed that episode. I think in episode 201, yes, 202,
and,
something like that.
And we mentioned that T'Less said to T'Pol, she was basically saying to T'Pol, "You've always been more emotional. I had trouble controlling your emotions." Yeah. So she does have some trouble controlling her emotions,
as evidenced here.
But she like loses her shit in this episode.
Yeah, because she's been dramatized. That's not a problem for me.
But there are Vulcan soldiers. Yeah,
they're not everyone's. That's the point. That's what's great about this show, that we're learning that all of it is bullshit.
He has a family.
To some degree or another, it is a.
That's impossible.
Farce. It's not a farce. Maybe that's going too far. It's a.
You're a liar.
You're telling me lies. Stop talking.
I said stop talking.
See, she's freaking out.
Yes, because she's been traumatized and she's dealing with some difficult philosophical questions here.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. It makes Vulcans more interesting. It's not something
we usually approach with on Vulcans.
No, but we do. We do. We know the Vulcan. Yes, exactly. On Enterprise, we do. This is what's happening.
I'm saying, with T'Pol, they've treated her with more emotion than any of the other Vulcans.
Yes. And again, I think in the time period, and it makes sense. And I think it for her character's storyline, it makes sense. It makes it a more interesting storyline. Sometimes the storyline is more interesting when they're more,
I guess,
like Tuvok is straight up old school Vulcan. He's, you know, super rigid.
I'm not against the idea of having more emotional Vulcans. I'm just saying it kind of came out of left field, and it just seemed like there was nothing surrounding what we've seen so far, even halfway, to support like the level of emotion she was feeling.
I don't know.
I just think it was kind of jarring. I think
there's a long from TOS onward. There's multiple examples of Vulcans not conforming to the expected thing.
There's that whole group of Vulcans that like become like a terrorist faction or something.
There's multiple logic people or not logic people. And then there's the baseball Vulcans who are all obsessed with like playing baseball.
They've never really.
And they get all mad when they lose.
But they've never focused on one Vulcan having like a breakdown. You know, the Vulcans don't generally have breakdowns.
Spock had a breakdown. Spock had a breakdown on TOS because of a virus where he was having trouble.
It was because of virus.
All right, dude. I think I'm providing many convenient arguments against all these examples.
No, but because that's because I'm right. I'm not. Their arguments aren't convenient. They're convenient because I'm right. I mean, they're not convenient. They're true because I'm right, not because they're not true because they're convenient.
Valeris's thoughts in Star Trek VI.
They're not true.
She was crying.
There's not true because it's convenient. It's true because I'm right, or right because it's true. I'm right. It's not true because
it's right because you say so.
It's not true because it's convenient. I'm right because it's true.
You know, I gotta say, The classic lesson in rhetoric is you got to know when the other person's won, and Dan has just won with the irrefutable logic.
I'm
right because it's true. It's true because I'm right.
I'm just saying.
It's not circular reasoning. It's Dan reasoning.
Like, Spock got usually if Vulcans become emotional, there's like a solid reason behind it. Ponfar, it's like, oh, that's part of their shit.
Here's a solid reason, or
they're a terrorist faction. Oh, it's just a bunch of renegade Vulcans.
T'Pol has been reminded of terrible trauma.
But no, because I don't think that's as convincing as the other reason. If you're sick, sure, all bets are off. If it's some different sect of Vulcan, sure, you know, you have like, you know, what's it called? Echo chamber shit that goes on, increasing each other's shit. But this is just a matter of a Vulcan not being able to handle normal emotions that Vulcans are supposed to be able to resist. Vulcans are trained to resist these situations.
I'm just, the difference between me and you is you're buying into the Vulcan propaganda more than
I am. No, I'm not buying into Vulcan propaganda. You are. No.
Slurping up that green soup shit.
I'm saying that I don't think they've presented enough side, like, evidence for like such a situation.
Jesse, this guy's trying to get invited to one of them Vulcan spas that are so expensive. Those expensive Vulcan spas.
I'm not saying it's impossible.
It's like
on
some desert planet.
Nothing to eat.
I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying that to me it was jarring and the reasoning was not as believable as some of the other reasonings to me.
Fair point. Very fair point. All right.
I mean, a virus that makes you super emotional is totally believable.
Okay, next on the list. Hey, that was a cool Arctic base, wasn't it? That's what my note says cool Arctic base. The production design is great.
Yeah, it was
Enterprise. Look, Enterprise overall had very good production design, but every now and then I think they had like a little extra that was both more advanced than 90s Trek, but still had the Trek vibe. Like when they're rooting around in Manos' ship, or T'Pol is, and she's opening up those canisters, and finding those spent warp casings or whatever.
The music. I was gonna. You can. Here's. I'll just play this. This is when they were breaking through. It's all scary music.
Like X-Files. That's some good Foley. That's some good Foley too.
Yeah, that scene, that music was one of those examples of really making the scene.
What if it had been like self-sealing stem bolts?
Yeah, man. That would have been awesome. But those things looked all
spent injector cases.
They looked both realistic and Star Trek-y.
Yeah,
the ship looked Star Trek-y.
I was
but better than say on a Voyager TNG or whatever.
Well, they were spent warp injector casings. Is that what they were?
Damn,
I wonder.
Right.
I wonder why.
At least it wasn't an EPS manifold. Am I right?
No EPS this episode.
Am I right?
So I was wondering why people need to haul spent warp injector casings. Why can't they just get a machine to do it? And what does and it's this? What creates a spent warp injector? So after you use a warp, then you like throw the injector away,
and you can't recycle it because it's got particles and shit in it.
Now this would be something that they invented. They invented for this episode.
It's got like a do not.
I think I've heard warp. It's warp inverter.
I think it's neat that the idea that there's like it's like how a bullet has a shell or whatever. Yeah.
You mean a cartridge is made of a shell and a bullet?
Yeah,
and
but
a
when
propellant.
You shoot, but no, when you shoot. Yeah. I'm just telling. That's how a bullet works. Yeah. But I'm saying when you shoot a bullet,
you shoot a gun. You mean. I'm just saying, if we're going to be semantically correct, you shoot a gun, which fires a cartridge.
You're doing this on purpose.
Part of the cartridge is a bullet.
You're being like this on purpose.
I'm being the way I need to be.
Make
your point. Yes, okay.
The shell. How a bullet has like leftover. It's got the shell like that lays on the ground there. It's leftover. I think it's neat the idea that when you use warp, you have this leftover piece of garbage that you have to deal with.
Usually
in Star Trek, when something's done with, it's like, yeah, it's just nothing. But like this makes it seem more real, like more gritty.
Maybe that's how it used
grittier.
To work. And, like, it doesn't work that way
anymore. DS9 and Enterprise were both pretty good at that. Mm-hmm. Voyager tried here and there because Voyager was all, you know, we're far away from space dock and shit like that. But as we all know, one of the issues with Voyager is they sort of abandoned the premise of actually having limited resources.
I like that they were like the shot of them like going through that scallywag bar and like them appearing.
That was
like,
great.
There was something about like, the way they shot that that looked really cinematic. I almost swear to God I saw film grain on there. I know I didn't because it was all digital. But
No, this was film.
Was it film? Yeah, I thought it was digital.
I don't think they switched to full digital until the fourth season.
Okay, I just feel like I saw.
They were high definition, but I'm pretty sure it was shot on film stock, at least for the first part of it.
Because now, something about that shot in particular looked almost uncharacteristic of Star Trek. Like I think of the episode of DS9 where they went to that. Well, O'Brien was on that planet and he joined the mob or whatever, and they were in this bar, but it just kind of looked like a set. This didn't look like your standard Star Trek set. Yeah. I believed it was like this fucking port
with a bunch of hooligans. It's that production quality. And then again, I could have my facts wrong. Maybe I just know that there at least maybe it was the pilot or whatever.
What's a pilot?
I think that there was a good chunk where they were shooting to film in high definition and then switched over to full digital filming. But the production value, the costumes, I was going to say, I think Enterprise really is, and even to this day, is still one of the best Star Treks when it comes to having an alien establishment full of all sorts of diverse rascally characters. We've seen it a few times on Discovery, little Strange New Worlds, there was like a Klingon camp type thing. But I don't know. This scene and other scenes from Enterprise where they're humans for the first time arriving on some
all the
alien world.
All tall.
Yeah, and they're really good makeup.
I like when Archer jumps on the table and he goes,
yeah.
I want to be able to whistle like that.
Yeah.
It was just like he stood up in the middle of the room and whistled. Like, that's kind of drawing attention to yourself. Oh, there was one thing
which I guess was the idea.
Yeah.
Because Archer's a human. He's classic, like, you know, 2002 human, where you're like, what I'll do is I'll get the bad guys to shoot at me. Then I'll know where the bad guys is.
It's not to be confused with this whistle.
That was some water polo. Hold on. On that last clip that you played, I want you to play it again, but before you play it again, can you tell me, is there a crowd sound, or am I hallucinating? And if I'm not hallucinating, if there is a crowd, is it like the crowd sound effect from like John Madden 93 on Sega Genesis?
Well, there definitely is a crowd. I didn't think about that.
I think
though.
It's the Sega Genesis crowd sound.
Okay.
It sounds like, you know, where like it plays static.
Yeah.
But like on the Genesis on John Madden 93. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, it kind of does sound like it. I like some classic Alien.
Sandras Incas!
Yeah. And then what does Archer say? He's like,
Sandras Incas!
I think he says, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Sandras Incas!
I couldn't agree more.
That's what he says. Now, here's a weird...
I like this new thing Dan's been doing. He's like, I'm going to rebuild the episode. I'm going to rebuild lines from Kapala.
I know, that's
lines.
Something... I don't know why I started doing that.
Real quick, we are up on a break.
Okay.
Can we take a quick break and then come back and do this business? Because you look like you got some good business.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. All right, now we're back.
Okay, we're back.
We're good.
In the bar.
You're good.
All right. In the back.
Dan, relaxed in the bar.
So I heard this in the background in the bar. See if you hear it near the end.
Where the hell are you going?
Play it again. I'll play the whole thing. Hold on.
Where the hell are you going?
It's a rough bar, man. It's got monsters.
It's got Jesse. It's got Jesse there.
Maybe that was me.
Jesse's always making that noise.
Sandras Incas!
I couldn't agree more.
It was an excellent bar.
Yeah.
Excellent bar. The whole vibe of it, the wooden tables, but it's a spaceport, and they have like alien acid on the thing. And at first I'm like, are they lying about the alien acid? It's like, no.
He kicked over the table.
They're not lying about
it. Yeah, it's serious business.
He kicked over the table.
Although it is interesting to me that T'Pol is able to mitigate this horrifying multiple inches of terrible acid.
But the platform's covered with acid.
There's a half centimeter of xylothoric acid.
Xylothoric acid.
Half centimeter.
And she's able to mitigate this by just getting some straps right. and tying them around her feet and, her
and
shoes.
And in the end, it didn't look like it really stopped too many people from leaving. I know they were running out from like a building
on
fire.
Half centimeter isn't that much.
But like, yeah, she seemed to do fine, like you said.
Did you see the little glowy stuff popping off the ground though when she each step she took fairy dust popped
that was
up.
Another scene that I thought was really like well done, like it was like dramatic. She's
you
all
it
like
was kinematic.
She was like walking
using the old pronunciation.
She was all like walking through like some serious shit going like ah, even Roman though it wasn't that believable that shit this shit was serious, but like
the shoe shit wasn't believable, but it was presented
it was presented well and it didn't seem to stop her or anyone else from like leaving the planet, so I don't know.
Does this look like a prison to you?
That guy.
Not if you value those pretty feet of yours.
Oh yeah, he had a thing about her feet.
Maybe it was Quentin Tarantino.
There's a half centimeter of xylothoric acid on that deck.
It was probably Quentin Tarantino.
Who played that role?
It sounds like him.
There were like several tall people. Did you see that part where like T'Pol sees Manos like in the reflection on the dish or whatever, and she turns around and happens to see Manos, and then out of nowhere this giant alien, and he stops and he like wasn't even going between them. He like steps in front of them. Yeah. He pushes her to the side and he turns around and like pushes Manos backwards.
It was like from the Three Stooges.
Yeah, he wasn't. It wasn't even like he was bumbling through them or just like didn't care about them. He specifically went out of his way to just start pushing people around. So
the whole bar or whatever it was, I don't know exactly, tavern, it was like an alien tavern.
Well,
even
I mean,
though it's sci-fi, to me it felt like a fantasy setting.
It was just a port like rest stop basically, I think.
Yeah, but I mean it obviously it's evoking an alien tavern. This is it's more of a tavern than a bar is what I would say. This is, and granted, I'm partly saying that to justify my argument that this felt like a fantasy setting more than a sci-fi.
Do you think
setting.
There was anything there other than that platform and that fucking rest stop? I mean, that was probably the only thing there in that area.
Well, I mean, they said it was something about mining something.
There was probably
other,
like
other
an
planet.
Arcade or something.
Yeah, there was something going.
An
there
arcade.
Was some sort of there
like
was some
a video
sort of
arcade?
Industry.
Yeah. Jesse thinks there was pinball there.
He watched Star Wars by accident. I told you, Jesse does this sometimes. He accidentally watches Star Wars, and then he's like, oh, this is Mos Eisley, and they're playing video games. They're playing, like, chess with little holograms.
No. Holograms?
Holograms?
There we go. Yes. That's what the people
somebody
come
said
for.
Holograms kind of like that in this episode.
He had, like, his wallet-sized hologram in his pocket. He was all...
Oh, yeah, that's what it was.
He was
wallet-gram?
He was all like...
It's a hologram of my family.
Hologram.
Hit a wallet.
It's a hologram. Hologram. It's a hologram.
Hologram.
So, we were talking earlier...
we were.
About... about the issue with the the sympathy, how we're supposed to be sympathetic or not, whether or not, how about that that works, Patrick.
We're not supposed
whether
to be...
or not we're supposed to be sympathetic to Manos.
We're not he's a bad guy.
Dan, I'm saying through the course of the story we don't know he's a bad guy until the end. So this is what I'm getting at. I'm making a point here. Making a point. This is what
bangers
I'm...
and mash for you.
All right. Over the course of the story, Manos is trying to gain the audience's sympathy. And the way it's written and portrayed, we do not have conclusive evidence one way or the other to know whether to give him sympathy and how much sympathy to give him if we are to give him sympathy.
I was giving him some sympathy at the beginning.
Right. Yes, exactly.
A little
sort
bit.
Sort of like a default. You see the family. And part of that evokes... I don't know. I don't believe it was done.
They wanted to rehabilitate me.
I don't believe
maybe
it was done.
Maybe that hologram was a fake.
I don't believe it was done on purpose.
Hologram.
I think it's meant to evoke. No, I don't think it's meant to, but it does evoke. It conjures to the mind.
Oh my God.
Conjures the mind.
Flatten my forehead and repoint my ears.
It conjures memories of Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode. Honor. Among Thieves.
run.
Oh, no.
What's that? That's that game you guys are always talking about.
Star.
All right.
That game is fucked.
Nicely done. Honor Among Thieves. We talked about it, I believe, episode.
I am Sinistar.
I believe it was episode 158 of the It's Kind of Star Trek podcast. We talked about Honor Among Thieves. Honor Among Thieves is one of my favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. And in it, I'm not going to spoil it, but long story short, it goes into the underworld, it goes into the Orion Syndicate, and there is a there is a character named Bilby.
Bilby Baggins. Bilby. Greatest little hobbit in the world, or something like that.
Bilby Baggins.
Bilby Baggins. Bilby Baggins. Bilby Baggins.
Bilby
Stanford,
7-3.
Stanford. So Bilby is a character who, it's always known, the audience knows the entire time that he is a criminal.
I killed him.
They know he's a criminal, and yet you gain sympathy for the character, and that's part of the purpose of that story. There's flavors of that here, except it's sort of set on its head, where our sympathy is contingent on whether or not this character Manos is a criminal or not. Now, you might still have sympathy for him, but it's probably going to be a different flavor, right?
Biotox.
And so for me, that makes the rewatchability of this episode, again, it's a little, not only, as I argued earlier, I think him being a criminal undermines whatever message they were trying to tell about the Vulcan government, but I also think it makes it a little bit like, okay, now that I know he's a criminal, you go into it, because I've seen this episode before, you go into it, you know at the end he's a criminal, and it's like, all right, does it make it a more interesting episode on rewatch? Kind of not. A lot of the story kind of hinges on whether or not he's a criminal, whether the Vulcan government is perceived to be telling the truth, even though at the same time telling the truth to T'Pol. T'Pol about his crimes. At the same time,
where would I stay?
At the same time as seeming to critique the government's actions about removing the memory and stuff like that, right? So again, it's a cumbersome, confusing moral landscape we're dealing with here.
They resorted to some old fashioned shit because, like, she seemed to be a special case in like not being able to recover from the.
That's what I've been saying.
But let me finish.
Let
me finish.
It doesn't make sense.
Okay, right. So, but then they went to her to be like, you have to do this mission. And like, as soon as they did that, like it undid all of that stuff. So why did they do that?
Yeah. And furthermore, I don't necessarily assume that this was an odd thing that they're like, holy shit, we got to do this with T'Pol. Who knows? Maybe this happens all the time. They seemed pretty good at doing it, I guess. They seemed to pull it out of their toolbox pretty quickly. But also, we didn't have any additional information. Like, it would have been interesting if T'Pol had talked to this person, one of these people, or got on the communicator and been like, what was the deal? And then they could be like, oh, you wanted this. Here's a tape of you asking for it. And you just, and that, you know... interrogate the idea, play around with the idea a little bit, provide us a little bit more context and information, because we only have the half-remembered fleeting moments that T'Pol brings up in her mind because of this, being reminded about this guy.
Did they know that, like, that dude was going to prey on her and that, like, maybe she would just shoot at him? They were like, maybe she's just going to kill him and then we don't have to worry about it.
Again, we don't know. That's a good
question. Right.
It's kind of a good question, right? They do seem highly invested in tracking down any of these people.
T'Pol.
This is, in a lot of ways, is that classic cop story. It's the undercover cop that gets too good at crime and decides to become a criminal. What's his deal?
Donnie Brasco.
It's that sort of thing, right? So that's
about T'Pol.
That's kind of cool, but again, they didn't fully go in that direction. I remind people.
Wasn't that your complaint for last week's episode of Homeward? Is that they didn't fully go into the. You thought they should have gone more in the direction of like talking about the philosophical like ramifications of the
my
crime
issue
directive.
My issues with Homeward was I think they were setting up a plot by creating a version of the Prime Directive, an interpretation of the Prime Directive that was way different and more extreme than we've seen before.
And this you felt they should have explored the Prime Directive more, but instead they just talked about the technicals of like transporting.
It just turned
around
into a video game, right? So it's not quite the same criticism because I think in this episode, I think all the things they're bringing up are interesting. It's just that in the end, it's confusing that the moral seems to be follow orders and don't feel guilty if your government tells you to do bad things. Like, I know that's not exactly what Archer was saying, but that's really what it kind of comes across at the end, where she's all like, blah, blah, blah. Because up until she shoots the guy, I'm thinking, oh, she lets him go. The moral of the story, she's going to let him go again, and she's going to, and it's going to be her choice, and she's going to have chosen this for better or worse.
Yeah.
Even though he's a criminal, she's going to choose
not to
make this person endure a similar, some sort of similar rehabilitation, some sort of mind brainwashing.
But
that's not what happened. She shoots him and puts him under arrest.
By the way, I thought he was being a little bit too casual about like strolling away. Like
was all the acid was burning through his feet.
Yeah, right. He was going to his brain. Like I know he thought that T'Pol wasn't going to shoot him or whatever. But like he was still like put a move on there. But here's the thing.
Some of that might have just been the set design where they're like, I guess just keep walking.
T'Pol was part of the Ministry of Security, trained in reconnaissance and retrieval. Okay, so that's basically almost like
two separate things.
What I'm saying is reconnaissance and retrieval. That's like almost like black ops kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and exactly. So my point is that if you're involved in black ops, you're not in the business of questioning orders. Like if you agree to be in black ops and you start questioning orders, you have no right to be in black ops because you've already accepted the premise of I'm going to do some fucked up shit.
And you know what happens? If you start questioning orders,
he's going to make a joke.
No, they're going to brainwash you.
Oh, yeah. They'll brainwash you. Yeah, like they did with T'Pol. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
It's not really a joke.
It's just kind of something
you
said.
You thought I was going to make a joke. No.
It happens. It's funny because it's true.
I think I told all my jokes for this whole podcast.
So I just think that's...
I don't think I'm going to say anything funny for the rest of the podcast.
I think that was... I just think...
Are you sure?
I think that was...
Not 100%.
I think that's one of my issues is just like... She should be like, if she's entering like black ops, basically, she should fucking like, you know, be not have such a breakdown.
It's not so much that I disagree with you, Dan. What I think is sort of interesting is that stories by definition are things that are not the everyday. And so to me, there's no problem with the occasional black ops person having trouble with
that's the story we're seeing. What you're doing is
that aberration.
What you're doing is bringing up the age-old argument of like
it's worth telling because it's different from the normal.
No, you're saying it's a story they can do whatever they want, and I'll repeat what I've said before.
Let me finish what I'm saying is
I'm gonna bring up the old art thing that I've said before that all of us have said before, like there have to be rules. All right,
and there's got to be rules.
There's got to be rules. There's got to be rules to a story, and you can't simply just throw in a curveball and call that good story writing because it's unexpected. You have to make it believable based on a set of rules.
I believe it.
To me, it's a spectrum. I agree with you.
Yes,
I guess we have different thresholds.
The
good to bad.
We have different thresholds. Of course, it's a spectrum.
There are tons of episodes of Star Trek that are brilliant, that are great, but still have some silly aspect to them because, you know, sometimes fundamentally you have to come up with some crazy shit in order to tell an interesting story. I mean, a good example is the whole story with the warp speed limit thing that sort of disappears. It's referenced a couple times, but basically that's an interesting story. They're telling it's an analogy to real world environmental concerns, but it's like if you interrogate it too much, it's a little silly.
You know what would be an interesting story?
I apologize for using the word interrogate too often.
An interesting story is if one day Troy woke up and started murdering children. That would be an interesting story, but it's believable? No, it's not. You know, so because those don't follow the rules of how Troy works.
Well, you've provided particularly extreme example,
but sometimes you need to provide an extreme example to get your point across. Obviously, it's a spectrum, and your threshold is at a different level than my threshold. I'm just saying.
So you're saying that this is the worst episode you've ever seen?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. On the subject of Manos and pronunciation, I noticed that Patrick said
subject. Which no one has brought up before.
Well, I noted it from something you said, Patrick.
Okay.
You started off by saying Minos, and then later on you said Manos.
I was mimicking you because you said Manos. It sounded more interesting to me. It sounded more Greek.
Well, more Greek. You said both. And so, but there's a reason you said both. I think there's a reason you said both.
Because they say both. Because
check it out.
Oh, shit.
Is that what you remember? What Manos wants you to remember?
Manos.
We've located Manos.
I'll inform the Vulcan ship that Minos escaped. Minos escaped.
Minos.
And this.
I'll inform the Vulcan ship.
Play the
Minos
middle one.
Escaped.
There was like a couple.
I'll inform the Vulcan ship that Minos.
Is that what you
escaped.
Remember? What Manos wants you to remember?
We've located Manos.
Because she's like mate. There's
Manos.
Manos. Manos. Hey, everybody. Hi,
I'll inform
I'm
the
Manos.
Vulcan ship that Manos escaped. Manos escaped. Manos escaped. I'll inform the Vulcan ship that Manos escaped. Manos escaped. Minos escaped the Vulcan ship that Minos escaped.
Yeah.
And then, but check it out. here in the middle, so it sounds like she says Minos. But after playing this,
Minos escaped.
She says says it another time.
Minos.
What do you think she said there, Minos or Manos?
She said Manos. It sounded like Manos to
me. To me when I play her back to back, when I play this,
sounds like Manos to me.
To me, what do you think, Jesse? Okay. Well, I'm going to play them side by side just to show you, like, to me, this is what it sounds like. When I do this,
Minos escaped. Minos.
Then it sounds like Minos to me. But when I play this,
is that what you remember? What Minos wants you to remember?
That's Minos.
Minos.
Now it sounds like she says Minos.
Yeah.
Here, just if you could be quiet for a second, I'll play it one more time.
Okay. Just for 1 second.
This sequence, it sounds like she's saying Minos. The next one, she's going to sound like Minos. This is Minos.
Minos escaped. Minos.
Now it sounds like Minos, the next one.
Is that what you remember? What Minos wants you to remember?
Minos.
See, it sounds different depending. It's kind of like that color theory shit.
With the blue and the gold dress.
You know what in the color theory, when you surround a color by another color, and depending on what color you surround it by, it like makes that middle color look different.
Do you have synesthesia, Dan?
No, I'm just saying, like, it's the same principle in that the sound, it's
you got stink
of season. It sounds like she's saying different things depending on the sound I played prior to it.
Yeah.
Did you surround it with different smells?
Jesse's got his own thing going on.
I'll inform the Vulcan ship that Minos escaped. Minos escaped. Minos I'll escaped. Inform the Vulcan ship that Minos escaped.
I know we skipped over it, but I liked the whole trip being in charge for a little bit and like not enjoying it. But specifically that he thought he was going to enjoy it, and it rapidly became a burden to him.
What's he eating? Like, he's eating like some pasta.
He was
salad
eating some like
something?
It looked like he was eating a penne pesto.
That's
what it looked like.
I thought he had like a sandwich.
It was like bow ties.
He had some bow ties. Oh, I'm sorry. Not you're right. It was bow ties. That's what
was
it was.
Bow ties,
they were both. They were like bow ties.
Bangers and mash for Reed. Denobulan sausage. Denobulan sausage for the doctor.
Bangers and mash for you. Denobulan sausage for the doctor.
The Denobulan sausage was all sliced on like a bed of lettuce or something.
It's funny, in Enterprise, the food looks like somewhat normal in Enterprise.
Yes.
Like, whereas later on, they had these weird poofy color, high,
looks
brightly
like a bunch of
things.
Fruit and
shit.
Yeah,
well, they got a regular old chef back there. What's coming up next?
The chef is the important member of the crew.
Soon he was all like,
"Let me get back to you. I'll get back to you."
He's getting all frustrated. And by the end, he couldn't even eat his meal. His meal was ruined. Do you notice that he tried to eat and he was like, "Now it's all ruined," because he realized the burden of responsibility. See, he wanted to just take advantage of the perks, but once he had
Captain's mess,
but when.
Come on, Captain.
All the water polo you could watch.
So at first he just wanted to take advantage of the perks, but then he realized there's responsibility. He was willing to let his crew catch some deadly disease just because he didn't want to
give them... Audience at home, that banging you hear is Dan jabbing the table with his finger.
He was willing to like let the rest of the crew get a terrible sickness just because he didn't want to be the reason they got...
Headache, nausea, diarrhea.
The running gag of him being like, "I'll get back to you," was just hilarious.
It was hilarious,
and partly because Connor Trinneer does such a brilliant job of he doesn't become immediately crestfallen. It's a step by step by step. His face just gets more and more frustrated.
Aren't they going to have something that can treat the diarrhea and the other side effects?
That's when you bring
in the snakes. You get the snakes for that, and then you bring in the badgers or the muskrat. Who was Rikki Tikki Tavi?
Rikki Tikki Tavi was a mongoose.
Mongoose. So they bring a snake in for your diarrhea, then they bring in the mongoose for the snake.
Snake for the diarrhea.
I know this was an off-air conversation, but we have spoken to you multiple times about the whole snake eating, the diarrhea eating snakes. It's a good idea. It's just not going to fly.
But you just need to get a mongoose to eat the snakes afterwards.
Yes, the problem is I can get you a mongoose by tomorrow.
No, you need the mongoose.
Go down to the National Zoo, get you a mongoose. It's the diarrhea eating snakes.
I don't
think a mongoose is going to eat a diarrhea eating snake.
No, the mongoose gets the snake, but the mongoose has to also retrieve the snake because the snake doesn't come out on its own after it's eaten diarrhea.
Well, where is it?
Well, where do you think?
Oh, gross. Okay, all right.
Let me get back to you.
All right. Yes, okay. It's all right.
It's So Conor Trinneer is great.
To what you were saying, Patrick, about how he gets more he gets more and more crestfallen. His first, let me get back to you. Like first, he goes like this.
Let me get back to you.
And then at the end, he goes,
I'll get back to you.
Yeah, yeah. You see, he's getting more and more frustrated.
More and more frustrated, and Trinneer does a great job of demonstrating that. And I really enjoy it. Like Phlox looked like he was enjoying giving this question to, and not only that, Phlox looked like he knew that Archer would be amused by Trip having to deal with a diarrhea.
Well, it's a very reliable device, but it's not perfect. But they would subside in a day or two. Very nice. Headache, nausea, diarrhea.
He's just like offhandedly mentioning it, like between bites of like sausage.
Also, I didn't understand why Tucker was so reluctant to let Reed take down the torpedo launch, or he needed to divert computer. Oh yeah, he needed to recalibrate the torpedo launchers. He needed to divert computer access from main engineering.
Yes.
And I don't know why Reed didn't want to do that.
Do you say torpedo or torpedo? You got to back.
I'm sorry. No, I'm Tucker. Tucker. Yeah, I don't know why Tucker didn't want
to
do that.
He just didn't want to turn off his warp engines that he loves so much.
Yeah, and it didn't make any sense because you need to recalibrate the torpedoes. It's
get stuck in there.
And I think, and wait. I think Tucker provided an argument that was self-defeating because his reason for why Reed shouldn't need to do that was he was like, we're not at war. We don't need to recalibrate the torpedoes. If we're not at war, what's the big deal about taking down the fucking main engineering? You're not going to need it for anything.
So Dan.
That would have been the best time since they're not at war. Dan, it would have been bad to do that during war.
Dan, as usual, you're 100% correct. You're 100% correct. However, I agree.
Is there a problem?
I agree that Reed is correct. Tucker is being silly. We're meant to think Tucker's being silly because it's his warp engines. However, and you may not, Dan, I don't know. It's been a while since you've
I may not or may knows.
It's been a while.
I may not or may, you get it? I may not or may knows.
Choosing not to get it.
At least you heard it.
Choosing not to
get it.
At least it's absorbed.
He's going to try to forget.
It's been a while since you've been a desktop boy.
It's been a while.
You get mad at me when I do that. It's been a while. Since you've been a desktop boy.
A desktop boy.
He's my
good time boy.
I'm a desktop boy.
Are we good time boys, Patrick?
Desktop.
Jesse,
good time desktop.
Jesse, do you want to be my good time boy, Jesse?
Once a week.
Only with a desktop.
Once a week, we are the world's good time boys.
But what if you get hurt?
And that's boy with an I.
Worldwide.
In the meantime?
I am a desktop boy. And a desktop boy understands that sometimes you want to reset your computer. Or have to turn off the computer for one reason or another, do some maintenance, or you got to turn off the power because to fix some electrical things, so you got to turn off your computer. But when you're a desktop boy,
yes,
you do not want to reset your computer. You do not want to turn it off. You've got all your servers and your this, that, and the other thing. You don't want to be doing it. And I understand. I vibe with. I sympathize with Trip Tucker not wanting to turn off his desktop, AKA warp drive.
He's very emphatic about that.
Even though it's perfectly reasonable to do.
Okay, I thought you were going on a totally like tangent, like not even a tangent. I thought it was a complete non sequitur, but you brought it home.
Not high, said the fly. Remember that old thing?
That old gag.
Not high. And then wasn't there something?
I'll be sure to tell him.
About fuck you, said the shoe or something.
See, you wouldn't want to be.
Maybe it wasn't fuck you. That one I know. I know the see you wouldn't want to be.
You're being so silly.
See you
silly.
Later, Alligator. See you later, alligator.
You're being so silly.
All right. Any other final things? Because we have to end the podcast soon.
I felt like when he was talking to what's his name? Who would the
Cal beats Stanford 7-3.
Yes.
Tavik was first of all, Admiral Forrest redirected a Vulcan ship. I mean, I know that's the joke, but
he didn't redirect.
Well,
High Command was gonna, they wanted to get the guy. No, Admiral Forrest was saying they're gonna meet you.
Yeah, Admiral, but Admiral Forrest sent them over to tell him the scores of the water polo game.
Oh, yeah, well, okay, yeah.
That's why he sent them over. They redirected a Vulcan ship to deliver sports scores.
I must insist, Dan, that you have a very minor misinterpretation here. The Vulcan ship was coming regardless. Anyway, because they were coming to get Manos.
But they didn't talk
coming to get Manos.
They didn't talk to him about anything else. Why didn't they bring Manos up?
Again. This will all make sense, I hope, in one but a moment. Less than a minute. the ship was coming to Abracadabraland.
That's true for the next planet.
Whatever the name of the planet was, the planet where the Enterprise was hanging
Parnaya
out.
Parnaya or something?
Yeah, not the one where the base was, the other one. The Vulcan ship was coming regardless because they were to rendezvous with T'Pol and get the prisoner. That's the whole point.
Yeah. Reconnaissance
and
rendezvous.
They wanted the prisoner ASAP. Yeah. They didn't want the Enterprise to bring them. They were like, the Vulcan ship is like, we're coming. The Enterprise is there now with T'Pol. She can go get the guy.
Yeah, but they didn't.
And our ship is coming regardless. They didn't need to talk to them about anything.
I think that's a lot of headcanon.
But
I think it's too much headcanon.
No. I think it takes way more crazy headcanon for your scenario, which is Admiral Forrest commandeered a Vulcan ship to send a silly
message. That's why it was ridiculous.
No, it isn't. It isn't ridiculous. It's all ridiculous in your head.
No,
it's
like,
not ridiculous in real
life. It's just hard to believe that he wouldn't be like, so, Archer, what do you think about Manos? And then that would have brought up a funny, silly scene, but they didn't do that because he didn't care.
No. I vehemently disagree with your interpretation of that event, but...
Are there other ships at this point in the Starfleet?
Whatever? They've got other ships, but none of them can do Warp 5.
Okay.
They're building like the Columbia or whatever. Was it the
Columbia? Why didn't the bioscanners detect it?
The bioscanners. Hey, did you get a little of that green juice?
No.
The glowing green juice?
Oh, yeah.
How did I miss that?
The biotoxin?
Yeah, the biotoxin. Right at the end when... Hey, guys.
Gatorade?
Hey, I don't even know if you noticed, but did you know that Travis Mayweather was in this episode?
Yeah, I know.
For real, dude.
At the beginning of the episode, you're like, oh my God, this is so great. Travis Mayweather's going out. And then half the time in the bar, he's not even there.
This is the only thing I was able to pull.
He kicked over the table.
And it's like a terrible, like, there's so much noise going on.
Right. Did he just say he kicked over the table?
Yeah, he kicked over the table.
You hear his voice.
He kicked over the table.
You see him getting, like, bossed around by Archer, and then, like, that's
He does a pretty kick-ass jump over a flaming table, though.
Well, he's great. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Why didn't they use it more?
And
he's great.
Right, I know. Exactly. But I wonder if Archer felt, like, insecure because Travis got to know the deal of the special mission before he did. Travis
was the guy who actually got Manos.
For real.
In the bar.
Like Archer
and T'Pol came up after getting manhandled by various aliens.
Did you feel like
I feel like Trip Tucker saying healthy living was also great? That was my second favorite part of the whole episode.
If you
look a little young for a Star Trek.
Maybe Starfleet captain. Patrick, maybe you weren't you have a terrible memory again, but I've played that sound several times in this episode.
Okay, play it for me. Prove it.
I've already played it.
All right, let's hear it again. I haven't heard it.
I've played it like three or four times.
I don't remember it in my brain.
I don't think you were listening again. I think you weren't listening.
I think you're accusing me of having a bad memory and you don't you have no proof.
I'm not accusing you of having a bad memory. That's what you say. I'm accusing you of not listening.
My brain is Swiss cheese.
No,
let me tell you
it's
Swiss cheese.
You're doing it right now. You're not listening to the words I'm saying. You're just simply waiting for me to stop talking so you can start talking.
Sometimes I'm not even doing that.
Sometimes, what are you doing those times?
Interrupted.
Yeah, see, Jesse got it.
Oh yeah, not even waiting.
Sometimes I'm not even waiting.
Right. That's my point. Is like you.
All right.
I don't think you forgot. I think you weren't listening.
Okay.
I think because I played it several times. Wrap it up.
I'll just have to listen back to the podcast to hear you play it.
What I was going to
say, I really like that part.
What I was going to say,
healthy living.
What I was going to say is that I felt like T3 was doing an Archer impression.
Yes.
I think when Tavik, he was trying to act like Archer because he was when he said
healthy living.
And then when he goes,
that's good.
Archer out.
He was trying to do an Archer.
I agree.
And he said he was young to be a captain. That got me thinking, like, how old is Archer supposed to be versus Trip Tucker III?
Yeah, I think Archer, he's like 80.
I think Archer's like, what, like 40 and T3 is like 32 or something?
32.
How old do you think Trip Tucker III was?
31.
You're like, 32?
No, well, I'm doing Price is Right rules, you know? I gotta go one below you.
Come on, Captain.
He's 1 year old.
I'll get back to you.
No, I mean, really, how old do you think Trip is versus Archer? What do you guys think?
I don't know. I can't tell anymore.
Would you think Trip Tucker would have been too young for a captain?
Maybe. I don't know.
You guys.
What do they have to go on? It's the first fucking starship.
it's Vulcans.
What does decon mean?
Yeah, when they rub the gel all over each other and then Archer and Archer gets
the,
a boner.
Is that the... No, that was...
Sort of like a half
that
boner.
That was Trip Tucker who got the boner.
They all get boners. Trip Tucker,
no, but
Archer,
it was
Reed.
In the first episode with Trip Tucker
They're fully
and
functional.
It was the first episode with Trip Tucker and T'Pol, and they were rubbing it on each other. And then Trip Tucker had something going on in his pants, yeah, didn't he?
All right. Well, we have to close down the episode. Last point.
Is that what that is? Is that what decon is when you got rubbed down with that goo?
Yeah, that's
decontamination.
Decontamination.
Short for decontamination.
Maynard,
I hesitate to think what you might have thought it was short for. Because we do have to close down the.
I just want to mention that Manos had a slick purplish gun at the end.
He did.
Oh wait, I meant to ask. Oh, what was that? Fuck, what was that shit? But T'Pol was reading at the beginning of the episode. It looked like music clefs.
That
like
was
clefs.
That was Vulcan. She was reading.
She was reading Vulcan, but it looked like clefs, like on some musical
it
staff.
It was wild looking.
It looked like some musical shit.
They're all musical and shit.
They had some kind of art language.
Yeah,
was
Vulcan language.
Yeah, it wasn't like just hieroglyphs. It was like this sort of like.
I want a book of that.
It's like
shit.
It's like different letters took up different amount of vertical space on the page. Right. Like
maybe I should make my own.
I get the impression you weren't supposed to read it left to right. You were supposed to read it in like some kind of weird random order or
up
something.
Up and down or something.
All right. Like all over the place based on a formula.
Last important point is this is where Archer and T'Pol become friends and start to trust each other. Probably a point we should have discussed more, but we ran out of time. So
that was pretty touching.
Archer and T'Pol are friends now.
He's very emphatic about
important
that.
In the arc of Enterprise. Okay, next week. Huh. Next week, what will we discuss? We do not know yet because.
Why don't you figure it out?
Why do you want me to tell you things?
You can always send us
suggestions.
If you want to send us suggestions, you can write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or you can send them to one of our social media feeds.
You pick the episode.
At It's Got Star Trek, Twitter.
Dismissed.
Mastodon, Blue Sky, all that business threads. We're Instagram. We're all over all that stuff.
What happened?
We're on Facebook.
Hey, what happened?
we're on Facebook. Oh. We're on YouTube.
I want to play this one.
Dan's going to play this.
The most ridiculous line in the whole episode.
Most ridiculous.
We don't do quickly and quietly very well, but we are good at arithmetic. Seems there's three of us, and only one of you.
It went on too long to get to that punchline. It was a long walk to that joke.
It was a hat on a hat.
He didn't know what to say because he was like,
we may be this, but we're actually this because that and this and this. Oh, and don't forget that too. So we're actually that.
Well, I'll tell you what we are is we are concluding this episode, but you can also go to our website, www.itsgotstartrek.com, patreon.com/itsgotstartrek to give us money. And
we'll have to go through decon when we get back.
That's the main. That's the all the main bits there at the end. Next week, yes, the algorithm will take
dismissed.
We'll figure it out. So keep an eye out. Probably Deep Space Nine. I think we're due for a Deep Space Nine. So if you want to, in the meantime, just watch all of Deep Space Nine. Otherwise, about midweek or something. You know, look at the website. You'll see what we will be discussing next week. With that, we bid you adieu.
Archer out.
And you.
Come in. Gentlemen, come in. Glad you could join me.
Water polo?
Very exciting sport. You should learn more about it.